Welcome to Manager Tools. How to scan a resume, part 5. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. How do I scan a resume? What do I look for on a resume? How do I decide whom to phone interview? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
If you're thinking about interviewing anytime soon, now is the time to start preparing. Interviewing is not about smarts. It's not about personality. It's all about preparation in the modern age as more and more companies use more and more tools to separate the wheat from the chaff. Our interviewing series is over 50 podcasts that go through in detail every step of the interview, how to prepare, how to dress, resumes, cover letters, how to chit-chat, how to answer tell me about yourself and your leadership style and significant accomplishments with repeated examples, how to close, how to ask questions, how to follow up, everything in enormous detail because we know interviewing for most people is a black box. Come and check it out.
All right, folks, if you're new to Manager Tools, we're in the process of talking through in quite a detailed way how to scan a resume. And so we're now on part 5. So if you haven't listened to the other parts, you might want to go back and listen to those. Otherwise, you'll be completely or at least partially lost. So we've done accomplishments. Now let's talk about what do we need to look for on a resume when looking at education?
Hey, you'd think it would be easy, right? Just look for the qualification that somebody has that's in my area. It must be okay. But it's more subtle than that. It's more complicated than that. And of course, the value of looking at education decreases as the candidate gets more experience. So after about 10 years, you're probably just looking to see if they went to college or not. You're really not looking necessarily at the subject or the grade. It's just a kind of, this is how they got to where they're coming from.
Well, that's right, because when somebody's new in their career, you don't have a lot of professional accomplishments to look at and determine what's the likelihood of them being successful in your organization. And so generally, the only one of the few things we have to look at to judge that is somebody's educational experience. And we'll get to it. And the biggest factor there, of course, in terms of accomplishment is their grades. But after 10 years, they have a professional experience that you can look at. And it's pretty clear, right? We're looking at education. When people come to our organization, we're going to ask them to learn, but it's not an academic environment. And it's very possible that they're, I guess, not very possible. It is possible, remotely possible, that they're bad at getting grades, but they're excellent at producing results in your organization. Because they are, you know, somewhat different, right? We're not asking people just to learn. But after 10 years of professional experience, you can look at their actual accomplishments in the workplace. And that should have much, much more weight than what they did 10 years ago educationally.
Exactly. So the more junior the person is, the more educational screening is important. And if a person is just out of college or in their first or second job, then it's essential that you look at those things. And you always want to look at education just as a, like I say, like, where did this person come from? And there's some jobs where you don't necessarily expect to see a college degree. There's some people who, you know, start work as part of an apprenticeship or with very practical skills. And then that's actually more valuable later on when they're more senior than a college education. So it does depend on the role again. But looking at education, you always want to look at it just as an idea of where they came from.
For the purpose of this discussion, let's take the position of interviewing somebody who's just straight out of college. Because if we didn't, it'd be pretty short. It would be a very short conversation. So let's take the example of somebody's, you know, fresh out of college or very nearly out of college. And let's talk about it from that perspective. If they have 10 years experience, then you cut this way back. Let's start from there.
So the first question you want to ask yourself is the educational level sufficient? And then what was the level of quality of the education they got? And then how did they perform during their education? You start with, is the level sufficient? Because that's an easy yes, no. It's as close to a black and white as you will get on a resume. If you're hiring for a role where a college education is required, or a master's degree or a PhD or a professional qualification, people that don't have that on their resume are immediate no's, because remember, the whole point of interviewing is to say no.
Right. So we don't overlook it, right? So we don't, we say, oh, well, they have all this other stuff, but they don't have a master's. They don't have a, they only have a bachelor's, but yeah, that's okay. We'll, we can overlook that, right? The idea in interviewing is looking for, like you said, for reasons to say no. You set the minimum standard. And if they don't meet it, you're done. It's a no, regardless of what else is on that resume.
Yeah. And if the role only needs education to whatever is compulsory where you are, like, so I think it's 16 in the UK and it's 18 here in the States. If that's all you need, then don't look for college education, right? You just look for the high school diploma or the GCSEs or whatever it's called in your company and go, okay, then that's enough.
What's 18, 16? I'm sorry. 18 year? What?
At the age of that you can leave compulsory education.
Oh, the age. Okay.
Sorry. I just went straight over that. My fault. Yeah. So if that's all you need, you don't look for a college education because that's not really not fair if you haven't said that that's what they need. And besides, you'll be overpaying. So don't try and overqualify people. That's in nobody's interest.
Okay. Now, that said, when you're looking at resumes, simply looking at the minimum requirement level for education, it's not necessary to stop there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if in the U.S. they need a bachelor's degree, which is a four-year college degree for international folks, yet they have a master's, we wouldn't say no, right?
No, exactly. You wouldn't say no. On the other hand, you want to be careful, like I said, about having overqualified candidates and paying more than you need to. So you want to look at the education that they have right now. And if you're looking for reasons to say no, if your yes pile of people who are actually qualified is too high, then you might look for an additional educational qualification to narrow that down. So if you've got too many and you only ask for a high school education, but there's a bunch who have 2-year degrees, then you can, get rid of all the ones that only have high school and take the 2-year degree ones, potentially, depending again on the role and what you're looking for and all sorts of things.
In a lot of organizations, there's kind of a job structure, right? And this one requires a master's and this one requires a bachelor's, this one requires a PhD. So I'm in an organization, I have a bunch of folks working for me, and the jobs generally call for a bachelor's degree. And we want to consider the impact of higher levels of education. It seems you could make the general assumption, oh, well, the higher the level of education, the better. How do you assess the difference in performance of somebody who might have a bachelor's versus somebody who might have a master's?
Well, of course, if you look at your performers that you have in the team, what you want to look at is who are your best performers and what level of education did they have when they came into the role? That's a really good indication of what level of education is necessary for the role. So if you've got a team of 10 and your three best performers all have master's degrees and everybody else has a bachelor's, it might be that the master's degree is what makes the difference between good performance or average performance and really great performance.
Yeah. And again, we're looking at what level of education did they have when they started the role. I mean, if somebody's been in the role for 10 years and has gotten a master's in the interim, we're really not looking at that. So what level of education did that person have when they entered the role? I think you're right. I think that's a great way of looking at it.
And of course, if the master's versus the bachelor's degree seems to be the thing that distinguishes your best performers from your average performers, it's perfectly reasonable to go through your applicants. Even if you said a bachelor's degree is required, if some of them have masters, pull out the ones with masters and take a look at those again and reject the ones which only have bachelors if the ones with masters seem better.
Yeah, I think that's a kind of a standard calling practice, right? I have a big pile. I'm not going to pull, let's say I have a pile of 20, probably not going to pull in 20 people to interview. So how do I narrow it down? And the great thing about that, if you follow our process, is that the pile of 20 that you have, it might be too big, but they're all meets the minimum level of requirements to get the role. So now we're just talking about getting the best of the best, mm-hmm. which is an awesome place to be.
So then the next thing, the thing that you have to be really careful of, though, is that you think that they finished a degree when they have not. And it's a really common mistake that people make, because the way people write their college education can look as if they actually finished it, but they didn't. And there's something to be said for the time that they spent in education. There's also something to be said that for the fact that they didn't finish their degree.
Yeah, well, yeah, time in education is, without going into all the great details, my son, his first semester in college, we would not say that that semester was useful in any way, shape, or form. It was an expensive semester, and he had lots of fun, and nothing of any redeeming value occurred during that time point. Now, just so I don't throw him completely under the bus, he did reform his ways and has since done very, very well. But that first semester was an interesting experiment in freedom for my son.
So the most common place for you to see education that wasn't completed is college or university. And you see the listing that looks like something like Los Angeles College, Finance, 1997 to 2001. And because there's 4 years there, which is the average length of a US degree, you think that the candidate graduated. But somebody who's looked at a lot of resumes will tell you they had not, because if they had, it would say so. And that's something you can think about with all resumes. You can't assume something, because if it had been achieved, it would say so. And so, you know, you have the subject, you have the 4 years, so you're thinking they're graduating, but there's nothing that says BA or BS Finance. And if they had that degree, they'd have written it on their resume.
Yeah, like BA or BS for Finance, Los Angeles College, 2001. Which is very different than Los Angeles College Finance, 1997 through 2001. It's subtle, but read enough resumes. The fact that it does not say graduated or that they have a bachelor's or a bachelor's of science, if it's not there, they probably don't have it. Did the person, the candidate, intend to mislead you? I don't know. I mean, we'll leave it to you to figure that out. And perhaps not. And, you know, maybe they just have no idea how to capture their educational experience on a resume. That's possible. But it's also true that a quick scan of any number of resume guidance websites will show them how to do so, right? So maybe you don't ding them for trying to mislead you, but perhaps you could forgive them not for not knowing how to do it. On the other hand, I might ding them for not doing the most basic amount of research on how to prepare at this point in time in their career, their most important professional document. And if they haven't taken the time to figure out how to do that, I think everybody understands graduating from college that the resume is pretty darn important. And if they're not willing to do the research to figure out how to present their educational experience, I might ding them for that. So either way, they're misleading me, and therefore it's a no, or they haven't done the amount of research that one would expect and certainly demand of somebody working in our organization. And so I'd say no for that. So either way, I don't have to question their integrity to say no. Okay, maybe that's a long, convoluted way of saying no, because I don't want to call them a liar. I don't know. But it seems reasonable to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you required a degree as part, you know, in the job description, you said this job needs a degree, and they haven't got one, you say no. There's a multitude of rationales for saying no, but if they needed an education and they didn't complete their education, say no.
Yeah. I don't think, as a general rule on resumes, right, the candidate is supposed to capture information in a form that makes not sense to themselves, right, not how they want to present themselves, but rather in a way that recruiters and managers want to see it. And Mark's not here, but this is, I think of this as like the corollary to the resume corollary to the Horstmann law of communication, right? That says, you know, communication is what the listener does, not what the speaker does. That's how they should be thinking about the stuff. And the most effective and accepted way, I think, to present a university degree is something like, you know, the degree, comma, the major, comma, the school, comma, the location, because some schools have multiple locations, and the year graduated, right? And if you see something other than that, Yeah, it's time to have second thoughts or have some concerns. And if you have concerns, that's a sign they might need to go in the no pile.
Yeah. So the next question is, what was the level of the quality of the education? And this is something that a lot of people skip over. They're looking for the degree, and if somebody has one, they just say yes. But if you've still got like 15 people, and you're not going to interview, you're not even going to phone screen 15 people, you need to whittle them down some more. And looking at the quality of the education is one of the thousands of ways you can do that, but a really important one. Most managers and recruiters aren't as knowledgeable as they easily could be regarding the relative quality of educational institutions worldwide. And there are, I think I saw 15 different surveys, ranking surveys about universities worldwide. There are three or four big ones and then lots of other ones. And you can easily see, even if you're in the US and you have a candidate from Australia, you can see that the University of Melbourne is the best university in Australia based on the rankings. But you also can see that Monash, which is also in Melbourne, is a top five school. And so if you look at those two and you think, I've never heard of the word Monash, I'm sure it's in the boondocks, right? You might dismiss a candidate from there, even though it's still a top five university in Australia. And that information is so, you just Google it. I mean, really, world university rankings, that's all you have to type.
Right, or look for a particular country. If you're interviewing folks from India, for example, there's some well-known schools that have great reputations, and it'd be good to know.
Exactly. So if you see it in an Indian school, if you see IIT, there's a whole bunch of them like spread across the country, but they're the equivalent of the Ivy League, and that to get in is unbelievably competitive. They have like 10,000 candidates for one place, something like that, huge numbers. And then the next level down is an NIT. And then again, there's a lot of competition, but slightly less. And if you don't know that, and you interview a candidate from one or the other and not understand that one's from the equivalent of Harvard and one is the equivalent of, I don't know, whatever's the next level down from the Ivy League, you may dismiss either of them for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. I worry a little bit that some folks listening to this will think of it as elitism, right? Looking at, and hiring somebody from Yale or MBA from Wharton, for example, would compare very favorably compared to an MBA from some local school here in Virginia. And it's not elitism. It's not the fact that it's Yale. The fact of the matter is that these are elite schools for a reason. It's very, very hard to get in these schools. They have to have done well in high school. They have to have done more than just get good grades, right? They have to communicate well. They have to interview well. And to some extent, if somebody got accepted into Yale, you don't have to look a whole lot at what their high school experience is, right? Just simply the fact that they got into Yale is a proxy for their experience up until college, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and IIT and NIT in India is another great example. It is so competitive. Just the fact that they got accepted and then they graduated from such a competitive school is an indicator of how smart and how hard they work, and a bunch of characteristics that you're looking for. So the school, the quality of the education, not only a reflection of how well they learned or what they learned in school, and those with, those elite colleges, they educate their students, right? But it's also an indicator, a proxy for success prior to college. And of course, success leaves clues, right? Somebody who's going to be successful in your organization will have been successful prior to joining your organization. So this is not elitism. This is smart interviewing.
We're going to add to the webpage for this cast some things about some of the different rankings that you can find on the web, some notes about what they may or may not be useful for, because each of the rankings uses different criteria. And they weight those criteria differently. So it depends on what you might be looking for. mostly the top 10 are in the top 10, but in very specialist areas, they might not be. So Caltech appears in the top 10 of everybody's, but not for health or medicine or anything like that. So if you are looking for people with a medical education, Caltech wouldn't be your number one. So we're going to add some more information about that to the website.
Excellent.
And partly what you were saying, the educational quality and what makes that important is the signaling effect from graduation from an institution where you know that the entrance requirements are super strict. If there's that many people applying to IIT schools in India, you know that your candidate who's been to one of those schools is very smart and has a lot to recommend them, because otherwise they wouldn't have been accepted.
That's right.
And the same with Harvard or Stanford or the other Ivy Leagues. And then there's some that are specific to industry. So Wharton MBAs are famous for their analytical skills. So you don't get in unless you have good analytical skills to begin with, because you either wouldn't be able to follow the class. Similarly with Northwestern MBAs, they're really good at marketing, and they tend to be known for marketing. You have to have some creativity and some ability to understand customers and all those things in order to even get in, because again, otherwise you won't be able to perform at the level which allows you to graduate. So there's clues, like you said, there's clues all over the place about how good candidates are based on what they did at school, which school they went to, and whether or not they completed.
Yeah. I think in the U.S., and most of our audience is the U.S., is that some hiring managers don't know a lot about foreign universities, and they might compare those foreign universities unfavorably to somebody who graduates from Yale or Harvard or one of the Ivy League schools here in the U.S. But there are some schools overseas that would do very, very, compare very, very well against Ivy League schools. And if you don't understand what those schools are and they cross your desk and there's a school in India, for example, that you haven't heard of, and so therefore you discount it compared to some other schools that are well-known in the U.S., you're at a competitive disadvantage. And the increasing internationalization of labor and skills across the world is there, right? And and so if you're a U.S. manager, it would behoove you to become intelligent about other schools around the world and their relative rankings, because there are some very, very good schools that you might overlook.
Mm-hmm. And even if they're not high in the rankings, if a candidate went to the best school in their country, that says something about the candidate, whether or not the education, if they're in the top 100 schools in the world or they're in the top 500, still, to get into the best school in your country is probably fairly competitive. And again, it tells you something about the candidate. And you might miss someone if you see that they went to university in, I don't know, Zimbabwe, and you think, oh, well, you know, it's an African country. I'm sure the education wasn't very good. Well, one, it probably was better than you think it is. And two, if the candidate got into the top university in Zimbabwe, that's a good candidate and one that you might dismiss if you don't do a little bit of research about where they went.
Good point.
There's also lots of schools in the US which have a really good reputation, but it's more regional than national. Rensselaer Polytechnic is a really good engineering school. And the same for the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. It's a really good engineering school, but it wouldn't necessarily come up high in the rankings because it's more specialized around engineering. And then Caltech is unknown outside of technology, but comes up way high in the rankings. Because it's one of the top five engineering and science schools in the world. And it's really not hard to learn all this stuff if you do some simple Googling and pull up the rankings. And you don't even need to retain it particularly, because the rankings do change. And so you only have to do it when you're recruiting.
So we just talked about the kind of level of quality of their education, right? Like by looking at the quality of the institutions that they were accepted to and graduated from. So the last part in looking at their education is, how do they perform? How well did they do? What was their accomplishments? And of course, we just look at all their extracurricular activities and whether they were in the chess club and whether they were on the cheerleading squad and, you know, what kind of fraternity or sorority they went to. And, and then when we get to the very bottom, we say, oh, yeah, and how well did they do with their grades? No, that's not what we do. That's not what we do, folks.
Yeah, that's right. Because being the best player in the chess club is really important in your marketing degree, in your marketing role, right? It's not enough that someone finished their degree. And the next question is, how well did they do it? You ask yourself that with every candidate about everything they do. If somebody says, hey, I think Joe would be great on your team, would you take him for a secondment? The first thing you're going to say is, how good is he? Like, how well does he perform? And that's exactly the same question that you're asking for graduates. Not only what did you do, but how well did you do it?
And the single biggest factor in terms of how well they did, it's not what fraternity or sorority they were in or what level of leadership position they had there. Not that it's not useful to know, or whether they're in chess club or how many clubs they were in or what their, you know, their extracurricular activities. It's one thing. The most important thing someone has to do, the biggest accomplishment someone has in their college career is their grade. Everything else pales compares to that. That is the thing you need to look at. And if somebody comes to, if I were interviewing and my grades were poor, I might stress all the other things that I did because I was in a lot of stuff. But that would be a sales job because all that would mean would be that I decided that I couldn't decide. I couldn't understand that the most important thing I did was achieve good grades. And that's not a good indication of my insight. So grades is it.
Grades is it. You're right. And so you look at how well they did academically as a proxy for how well did they perform. And there's different ways of showing performance throughout the world. So the US has the grade point average, where 3 is good and a completely reasonable standard for above average. And then 4 is all A's and 3.5 is exceptional. So you're looking for above 3s, 3.5s are brilliant, 4s are amazing. In the British system, the highest grade you can get is a first, and then the next one down is a
first,
second.
Like for first class. That means
yeah, exactly. First class, second class, and third class. We have degrees, but second class is divided into two: an upper and a lower, and we call them 2-1 and 2-2. And then in the German system, it's the opposite. So 1 is the highest, and 4 is low. So you need to be looking if you've got someone who attended a German university. You've got to remember that if they have a 4, that's not good. If you think about the American system, you might misunderstand that. And again, in the German system, you can only go to university if you've attended a certain type of school beforehand. And so the fact that they went to university tells you everything you need to know about their high school education. So they often don't put that on their resumes. And of course, most hiring is national. Most people are looking at resumes which are from their own country, and most people, most managers know how their own system works. But of course, it's useless if you know it and then you don't use it as a way to screen resumes.
That's right. Now, it's true often that we don't know the GPA from the resume, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, not everybody puts it on there. And for new professionals, for ones with only maybe just out of university or maybe with only one or two jobs, they often list various activities and honours. And so they give you a sense of their overall performance. A fresh college graduate with no distinguishing success at school is less likely to blossom into a top performer than a graduate with signs of a high GPA, extracurricular activities, and leadership positions around campus. You know, good people are good people.
Right. So, Wendy, what would be your reaction to a recent college graduate interviewing, providing a resume, and did not show the GPA? What conclusions, good or bad, would you infer from that?
I don't think I would infer anything necessarily. I don't expect the GPA to be on there.
You don't, okay.
But it would definitely be one of my first questions in phone screening. And if it was not good, then that would, you know, that person isn't coming in for an interview. I wouldn't let people get to the interview without knowing what the GPA. Their qualification was.
Okay. Yeah. And just kind of take the other side of the coin, you wouldn't discourage somebody who got a 4.0 from a prestigious college of putting that on there, right? So it's not
absolutely
a negative. Okay.
Yeah, of course. If you've got it, then put it on there.
So the flip side of it is, would it be unreasonable for me to say if there's not a GPA listed that I should be concerned that it's a poor one or not an excellent one, put it that way?
I think you could assume that. I think it's less black and white than some of the others. Like, okay, if they definitely don't have BA and a degree title, they probably, is 90% certainty they didn't complete. If they don't have a GPA on there, I would be less certain.
Okay, I guess that's the key. You wouldn't say no. It's not strong enough that you go like, okay, if they don't have it, then they're obfuscating and not sharing their bad GPA. So you wouldn't go that far.
No, and you can tell, I mean, you can, none of the stuff that we've talked about in any of this series is necessarily an in-out. We're not looking at one single thing. We don't look at the education and then say, oh, okay, well, this is a good candidate or this is a bad candidate. We look at the education along with any jobs they've had, along with where they've come from, along with, you know, other information they include, along with their accomplishments, their responsibilities. It's put it all together. Now, if I had a candidate who apparently couldn't keep any kind of teenage type jobs, you know, like working in Subway, for example, if somebody had 10 of those for 3 months each and then they didn't include their GPA, then probably I would say no. If somebody has done something like worked in an office for an accountant and kept that job every summer while they've been in university and they don't have a GPA, then I would probably phone screen them. It's not one of those things that you can judge in isolation.
Good. Makes sense. That's good examples. Excellent. Okay. Well, I think suffice it to say, a lack of high performance at a university is a reason to go in the no pile. We'd agree there, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. All righty. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll continue on this topic next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos of management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want. With easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions, it couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're a Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Manager Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.